A Playlist Original.
Support for the Films at Home podcast is brought to you today by Manscaped, the men's lifestyle brand that is disrupting the market. If you follow me for a while, you may have noticed my beard, and that's because it's been in every single video that I have posted on this YouTube channel because I have not clean shaven since 2010. This beard is literally older than some of my viewers at this point. And now, finally, Manscaped is launching a new product, the Beard Hedger Pro Kit. The Beard Hedger trimmer has a super powerful motor and titanium-coated blades to cut through even the thickest beard hair with ease. Considering my beard is thicker than steel wool, this was an awesome addition to my beard care routine. This trimmer is super cool. It also has 20 different cutting lengths on one single adjustable guard. So other trimmers I've used, they have a bunch of guards that get lost in different sizes. This trimmer is a super easy all-in-one solution. The Beard Hedger Pro Kit also comes with beard oil, beard shampoo, beard conditioner, and beard balm, all in a convenient travel case to take with you on the go. So join over 8 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped today, including yours truly. Simply go to manscaped.com and get 20% off plus free shipping when you use the promo code FILMSATHOME at checkout. That's 20% off plus free international shipping with promo code FILMSATHOME at manscaped.com.
Coming soon.
Coming soon.
Coming soon.
Coming soon.
So much
coming
soon.
To video.
Coming soon to 4K Blu-ray. A Playlist Original, this is the Films at Home podcast, your source for everything home entertainment.
Hey everyone, Jeff here. So quick thank you to our sponsor Manscaped for supporting this episode, and a quick thank you to you all for coming back out to the Films at Home podcast, whether you're watching on YouTube, the video version, or you're listening on your favorite audio app on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. I appreciate all the support for making this podcast so successful. Now, today's episode, we have actor, writer, director, and physical media enthusiast Dominic Burgess. Dominic's sort of a guest actor, I guess you can call him, a character actor. He pops up on things from time to time. He's a working actor. Most recently, he was in Dahmer on Netflix, where he played John Wayne Gacy, a very convincing version of John Wayne Gacy, very creepy. I knew him from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. He played a Psycho Pete in a very good episode of that show. And he's also been in things like Star Trek and Doctor Who and plenty of other network television shows where he pops up from time to time, and movies as well. So he has some really interesting insights on, you know, LA and Hollywood. He's been there for the last 15 years, how things have developed out there and how the industry is trending, even in the heart of entertainment in the world, physical media stores in the area. We talk about his physical media collection and his collecting habits, his home theater setup and his apartment. And we also talk about things like residuals and how physical media sales can affect residuals for working actors like Dominic, and, you know, how the streaming contracts work and how they pay out and how it's very different from, you know, what it used to be even just 10 years ago. So a very interesting conversation where we touch on a lot of different topics that I think you guys will really appreciate. And Dominic is a great guy. So make sure you check out his IMDb page, check out what the different shows, you know, he's acting on or appearing in, coming up, what he's been on in the past. I think he hopefully will get more work in the future, because I really enjoyed everything I've seen him in. So sit back, relax, enjoy this interview, and I will catch you guys at the end. All right, everyone, here with our interview today, we've got Dominic Burgess, actor, editor, director, collector, physical media enthusiast, you name it. So Dominic, thank you. Thanks for joining us. You want to give a little background on yourself, sort of where people might know you from, what you've been up to lately, what you've been in, and just sort of your background as an actor and collector?
Yeah, sure. I'm Dominic Burgess. I am an actor and writer and director and physical media enthusiast. I get around. I jump around from show to show. A lot of people know me from Sunny in Philadelphia or Psycho Pete. I did a show called Dr. Death, some Star Trek Picard, Feud. I just finished up an Apple series called Mrs. American Pie. I keep pretty busy, which is nice. And then physical media-wise, I've always loved physical media. I left high school in 2000 and got a job at a supermarket called Tesco. And with my very first paycheck, I picked up a multi-region Blu-ray player from Tesco And it was so, comparatively now, it was super, super cheap. And that DVD player lasted me for so long. It was such a good player. And, you know, I would import DVDs from the US. But my first DVDs were Alien and Aliens. I got the combo with the DVD player and Alien and Aliens. And then I was off to the races. And then I ended up during drama school working in a store called HMV in England. And I was in charge of their DVD section. And that was a mistake because I bought everything without rhyme or reason, especially if there were sales, because I would get staff discounts. So if there was like, you know, a Christmas sale and stuff was £3, I'd be like, yeah, I'm going to get this for £1.50. I don't care. And a relentless amount of collecting that wasn't, there was no rhyme or reason. And it got a little unwieldy. And now my collection is a little more refined. It's a little bit more me.
Yeah, you mentioned before we started that you've been even consolidating that a little bit. So you're going through part of like a little bit of a curation of the collection right now?
Yeah, I usually will go for films that I know that I like or that I've seen that I love. If something's pretty cheap, we have a store around the corner from us called Game Dude, and they have a Blu-ray section, and they're sort of lined up on the spines, and you sort of go along and pick out what you want, and they're sort of color-coded by price, and they have Blu-rays for like $1.50. And so if it's $1.50, I'll take a chance on something I haven't seen. Most of the consolidating I'm doing right now is I just switched out my Star Trek Blu-rays for the HDs. I think my next gen set is coming tomorrow. And I just consolidated all my Jurassic Parks into a box set and just sort of upgrading some HD stuff to 4K stuff that
gotcha.
I really enjoy.
Yeah. How have you been loving the 4K stuff? I mean, it's been
insane. I love it.
I feel like we're getting everything.
I love it so much. There's still a lot of stuff that I'm waiting for. I need Titanic in 4K. I need Aliens in 4K. I'll take Alien 3 in 4K. I love Alien 3. I know it's not for everyone, but I love those films. Yeah, they're my biggies. Cloud Atlas! I know a lot of people don't like Cloud Atlas, but
I heard that there's 4K, huh?
Yeah, but I heard there's like this massive 4-hour cut out there somewhere in the world, and I want it and I need it.
Wow, I guess I just assumed that had one, but it must have come out like sort of just before.
Yeah,
before,
I think so.
Just before when everything was just like big theatrical movies would get 4Ks.
Uh huh.
Oh yeah, that would be a good one. Haven't thought about that in a while. But yeah, I can see. Is that Titanic behind you up on the top?
It is Lego Titanic.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, I get Lego sets. I find that it helps me learn lines. If I have a lot of lines to learn for auditions or for a show, if I'm doing something with my hands, then the lines will kind of stay in my head. And then if I get to set and they're like, oh, you got to walk and talk and carry a drink and open this door, then I don't get thrown because I've already sort of done stuff with my hands physically, if that makes sense.
It makes sense. It's kind of, I mean, that's like, I was always that way with taking notes in school. Like if I didn't write it down, you know what I mean? There's something physical about that connects to your brain to remember things.
Yeah.
I totally get that.
In school, you had to show me. If we were in chemistry or physics or biology and someone's like, this is a covalent bond. I was the kid who needed like, no, put the liquid in the jar and let us see the explosion. I don't know if covalent bonds explode. That's why I didn't take chemistry for very long.
Neither do I. Science and math is not my strong suit.
So me either.
You've got me. I tried those classes. They did not work well for me. But yeah, so I do know you, I will say, as I guess Psycho Pete, first of all. I'm a huge Sonny fan, so
me too.
I instantly recognized you as Psycho Pete. That is a great episode. Very funny episode, actually. One of my favorites. But I also thought you were I had just recently seen you in Dahmer.
Oh, yes.
You make a very creepy John Wayne Gacy. I'll give you
that. Oh, thank you so much.
I was like, my God, this is scarily accurate. And like, I guess if they ever do a Gacy version of Dahmer, like,
I'll take it.
You should be lined up at the front, because that was just, you know, a small part of that show, but very impactful, like very creepy part of that show.
Yeah, it's a tough show to watch. Hard subject matter, and they it's dark, but nice to do as an actor, because I don't usually get a chance to go that dark very often, or really dig into something that's learning a new accent and stunt choreography, and so it's kind of fun to tackle that, even though it's a small little part of the show. It was a lot of
very
fun.
Memorable, though. I mean, it's, and yeah, it's about as, I don't know if you could go much darker than DC. So that definitely must have been interesting to dive into that world.
Dahmer, Baby Geniuses 3.
Right. Hey, I mean,
hey, we got to work.
Exactly. I was going to, so when did you move over to LA and start the whole acting thing?
I moved here November of 2007, just as the writer's strike was getting kicked off. And now we're approaching another writer's strike here in 2023. But it actually worked out pretty well for me. Sounds terrible, because it sounds like I was taking advantage of a terrible situation. A lot of casting directors had no shows to work on. So a lot of them were teaching classes and holding generals and meeting new actors that they'd never met before. So for me arriving to town and then sending emails being like, hey, I just got to town, I'd love to meet you. Casting directors had nothing but time. So I met more casting directors in the first 3 weeks of being in LA than I had done in 3 years of being in London. So it was really, it felt like home right away. I got a job at a movie theater called the Arclight out here. I lasted 3 weeks at Blockbuster Video in Burbank, Glen Oaks. And then I had to get out of there. But I found my feet pretty fast. And this has been home ever since.
Awesome. So we're going on about over 15 years now in LA. So, you know, when you think about how different, so, I mean, you're coming to LA, I guess, if we go to physical media and just like home video and the way the entertainment industry was trending, you're coming in, you know, Blu-ray's kind of just getting its legs, right?
Mm-hmm.
And now we've 15 years later, you know, we've got new formats, but things have shrunk. Like, just being in the world and being in the industry, and from what you hear from people, you know, how has the sort of attitudes changed?
I can speak for myself. I love physical media. I love it. I like having a library. I like being able to browse my shelves and pick things out. From an actor's point of view, everything is changing, and it's changing so fast because, you know, streaming services are considered new media under SAG contracts. And that means that pay scales have changed from what old network television series were, or films with theatrical releases were, because now Netflix films and Amazon and Apple, all these streaming services are new media, which in the contracts, I think, were described as an unknown quantity or an unknown variable. They didn't know how it was going to perform, so they were allowed to pay you less. And I know that some streaming services, the pay scale runs week by week as opposed to episode by episode. So you used to work on a TV show on ABC or NBC, Fox, and you would be paid 8 days for doing an episode of Grey's Anatomy or whatever the show was. And now they can pay you by the week. And so technically, a streamer could hire an actor on a limited series and shoot all of their stuff out in 1 week and effectively get 8 episodes worth of content for 1 week's pay. It's a messy old situation. And it's still constantly changing. You know, that I feel like there are new streamers rising all the time. And then, you know, the length of seasons have changed on streaming services. Again, you know, you used to have Star Trek or X-Files or Buffy with 22, 23, 24 episode seasons. And now the model is anywhere between 6 to 12 episodes. And So then you're sort of like, well, what do I do for the rest of the year? residual pay, and with the loss of physical media, that's a sort of residual avenue that has sort of gone away too. With streaming, the residuals are sort of set up in a way where you just get one check every 12 months, and it's not comparative to the amount of viewers that have watched the show, or it's just a lump. Well, I say a lump sum, it's not very much money, but it's just a sort of standard issue check that, like, oh, you're on the streaming service, here's this check for X amount. Yeah, streaming.
Yeah, so that's it. So I think about something. Let's use the two examples I know the best, right? So you have Sunny, right? And you're in an episode. You get residuals. That is a show that I'm sure sold a lot of DVDs. I know they had Blu-ray releases up until just a couple seasons ago. They were still doing them. I have them. I know a lot of people bought them. I mean, they were on the shelves at Walmart. And then you have a Dahmer where, you know, you're in one episode of an eight episode show, something like that, that runs on Netflix and then has, you know, typically 15 years ago, that's something that runs on HBO and probably gets a physical release somewhere or is watered down and runs on a network or an FX or something. So the pay difference there, I mean, how large is it when you're talking about the residuals you'd get from a DVD sale?
It's a pretty big, you know, the pay scale on shows, you know, I think if you were an actor in the 80s and 90s in LA or Vancouver or any of those markets, I'm sort of what you would call a guest actor who jumps from show to show and will do one episode here and one episode there. I think back then you could make a real good living because shows would pay above scale, and then the residuals, you know, I don't know if you know about syndication, that if you got over 100 episodes of a show, then it would go into syndication and be running forever. And so those residuals, you know, they're diminishing returns every time it airs. But, you know, it's still nice to have that income when you're not guaranteed a job. I don't know, like right now I'm gainfully unemployed. I don't know if I'm going to have an audition tomorrow and be working next week. I don't know if I'm not going to book the next 10 auditions I go out on, and I'm not going to be working until June or July. I don't know. And so that residual income was always sort of a cushion in some way that I could be like, okay, if everything falls apart, maybe I'll scrape together $400 in residuals this month that I can, you know, get by and survive and manage. And now, yeah, that's all gone.
So it's fair to say then, this has always been my hypothesis, but it's pretty fair to say that if it's sort of like supporting your favorite musician by buying the merch or the CD, and you know, the best way to support a film or a TV project is really it's to go out and purchase a DVD, a Blu-ray, like actually, because the streaming, you know, if I stream 15 episodes of Sunny, it doesn't really do a whole lot. I mean, except for the guys at the top who are, you know,
You know, the producers.
Obviously,
and,
Charlie, they're doing fine.
Glenn's doing fine. Yeah.
I mean, Rob McElhenney bought a soccer team. Like, they're okay. But yes, the other actors who you want to support on those shows, you know, I guess the best way is really to, you know, sort of support with your money with a physical purchase. Once it gets past the point of, it's not syndicated, because I don't know really how else you'd support. This is the thing that gets me. It's like, how do you support the smaller streaming shows or even just shows you like that are just have been on forever and are on streaming services? Like, it's hard to support.
Yeah, it is.
A lot of shows don't put out DVDs anymore.
I mean, the shows that I love, I will still go and get the discs for. Yeah. You know, I pre-ordered Last of Us, and I picked up House of the Dragon, and I got Game of Thrones and Deadwood, and all the shows that I love, I'm still like, no, I want them. I want them in my library because I love them and I like supporting, and I just like having that the library there. I have a couple of friends that were in Los Angeles for a while, and they purchased through Amazon or Apple, but they made purchases through streaming for films and music. And then they moved back home to England and found themselves region locked out of content that they had purchased. Mm-hmm. Albums and movies and TV shows that they had legally bought. And then they moved overseas, and then like, well, sorry, can't have access to that anymore.
So I never thought about that, but I have heard that from others. If you move countries, you're kind of screwed with the digital purchases, because they are so strict on that stuff.
Like, yeah,
it's kind of crazy.
I found myself, I mean, I've always collected physical media back home in England. In my parents' attic, there are thousands of DVDs. I probably replaced most of them now. But I think it was before lockdown, I was driving myself nuts because I just wanted to watch Air Force One. And I went to HBO, and I went to Amazon, and I went to Apple. And I just want to watch. Why can't I find Air Force One? Now it's on somewhere.
It's a huge movie, which is what's crazy. Is like, that is, everybody knows Air Force One. So how is it that we can't find it?
Now it's The Abyss. You're lucky if you can find The Abyss. That pops on and off streaming, right. And it's like catching lightning in a bottle. And
Yeah,
I'm ready for that disc. I'm ready.
I think you'd mentioned Titanic. Uh-huh. Aliens, The Abyss. Yeah, there's a common theme there. We're all very ready for those.
He's, James Cameron's a technical wizard, and I really enjoy the special features on the Aliens discs and the Terminator discs. Anyone that pushes the boundaries of filmmaking, and I can watch something and not realize how they've done it, and then, you know, like behind the scenes, they pull out and like, oh, look, the roof of this alien hive was actually a miniature that we put right in front of the camera. And then we had these people down here, and then, magic.
Well, and that's, you had mentioned before we hopped on to like the special features, as somebody who's getting now into, you know, writing, directing, how big a deal that is, how it's, and I've talked to a few special features producers here on the podcast, mm-hmm. and it's like, even they talk about it. It's like this free film school, like that you can get. And I think people just forget.
Yeah.
This stuff exists, and you can learn so much from it just on a $20 Blu-ray.
When Lord of the Rings first came out on Blu-ray, the extended editions with the appendices, feel like I sat down, I think I got them on Christmas Day, and I sat down and I watched the films, and then I watched it through again with Peter Jackson's commentary, and then I watched it through again with the actor's commentary, and then I watched it, and it's an education. And then all the bonus stuff, you know, just people sitting here making chainmail, and this is how we make the chainmail, and this is the cut that we make, and it's an education. And I miss on streaming, I think there's a couple of films now that might have commentary tracks, but I miss director's commentaries. I love deleted scenes, and I miss that in the streaming age, everything that goes into that.
Yeah, they're pretty few and far between on digital. There has been a trend lately to include more. On the digital side, speaking of James Cameron, like Avatar, The Way of Water just released on digital, and that has like, I think it has like 3 or 4 hours of special features. But he's the type of guy, right, who's like, who appreciates that and gets that, and also has the pull to say, look, mm-hmm. if you're putting, you know, because they're holding back the physical media release of that.
Yeah.
So he's going to say, well, if you're going to put it out at home, I want my features on it. And they're going to say, okay, James, you're getting your features. That's not everybody can do that. But yeah, it is a real shame. And there's a lot of TV shows that I wish there was more behind the scenes for. Like, one of the things I was most excited about getting my Game of Thrones 4K box set mm-hmm. was as much seeing it in great 4K quality, because as many people know, especially that last season was a little tough to watch on HBO uh-huh. Max, but it also had all those features, and that's such a epic grand show, 7 seasons. The effects and the sets from season 1 to season 7 are vastly different with the budget.
Yeah.
Like there's such an, but you really only got like that 5-minute snippet at the end of episodes where they'd be like, yeah, here's a little behind uh-huh. the scenes, and then we're on to the next thing.
No, so I want everything.
Yeah. I thought that was fascinating. That's in The Last of Us and these other shows that mm-hmm. have this production quality. I keep going HBO because they're, but like, I wish there was more of that for Netflix. I wish mm-hmm. there was, where are the behind the scenes on Dahmer? Where's Evan Peters giving a commentary about how he got into that freak show of a character and got that dark? Because it's fascinating.
Uh-huh.
And we have nothing on it, really.
Yeah. It's really sad. Someone who's sort of expanding into writing and directing, I would love to do a director's. I want to know who's stopping people from doing director's commentaries, because I pick up discs now and it's sort of bare bones and just, you know, a fluff 10-minute piece of like, everyone had a really great time on set. Here's us behind scenes. Look, we're crafty. Enjoy the movie. But I want like the nitty gritty of everything. Yeah. I like the mess. Yeah.
No, I hear you. It's almost like, I mean, it has to be. The guys who I've talked to do the special features do great stuff like that. But again, I think it's few and far between where they may get asked and pulled in. But that's why we love as collectors, Paramount Presents in that line, because mm-hmm. they've made sure to include that stuff. We love a Shout Factory, an Arrow Video, Second Sight over in the UK, and some of the uh-huh. work that they're doing is just incredible. What are some of your favorites like lately that you've been coming across that are sort of that full package that people may want to look out for?
Gosh, I mean, that have been coming out lately?
Lately, all time. You know, any of your favorite commentaries or behind the scenes stuff?
I mentioned the Lord of the Rings commentaries. I just picked up the Middle Earth box set with the Lord of the Rings and the Hobbit in 4K, the whole.
Yep.
Right here. This guy. Which I love.
The only thing with that though is it's missing special features.
That's why I kept my Blu-ray set.
You've got to keep the Blu-ray set.
Uh-huh. I love me my Alien Blu-ray set. I did get the Alien in 4K. I'm waiting for the rest of them to come in 4K, and then if there's a box set, I'll get it, as long as I'll get it, and then I'll see if I need to keep that for the special features. What I do appreciate about this box set is the Alien 3 commentaries do go in depth on what a mess the production was, about the rewrites and the budget and how everything was chaos. And I do appreciate that it wasn't glossed over and all the footage wasn't sort of just lost and people being like, here's the film, everything's great. Because oh boy, I would love to see all the footage on Rogue One, and I would love to see all the footage on Solo. And, you know, I don't think that will ever see the light of day. But that's what I enjoy. Like, you know, as someone interested in filmmaking, I want to know the decisions that were made and why. I love watching deleted scenes and saying like, oh yeah, I see why that was cut. Yeah, it was superfluous. Oh, repeated information. And then sometimes you see deleted scenes and be like, why? Why would they cut that out? Right. That makes no sense. I picked up, I hadn't had a chance to break into it yet. I picked up the Midsommar extended edition.
Oh yeah.
I'm angry because it won't fit into my shelves. It's a weird shape, and so it doesn't live with the other DVDs. So I'm excited to jump into that. I picked up, what did I just pick up? All Quiet on the Western Front. Marcel Lachelle with Shoes On, which I got from A24. I think they're the most recent ones. And then the Star Trek TNG set will come tomorrow, and I'll dive into that.
Yep. Releases. I should know this. I do this weekly and post a video about it. Yes, it releases tomorrow, Jeff. April 4th. Uh-huh. So, yeah, that'll be a good one. I'm curious. I have to say, I just missed Star Trek growing
you
up.
You did? Oh, no, that was
It just wasn't. I was Star Wars. Everything was Star Wars.
That was my brother. And I was Star Trek. Yeah.
But I'm curious how these ones will look. I mean, from what I know, I mean, how is compared to the OG Star Trek, William Shatner, which I did review those and check those out. Wrath of Khan is great. I mean,
yeah.
Just a great movie. How does the production quality of these, the next generation, kind of match up to those? Like, you think it's going to be worth the 4K release?
I hope so. It's kind of hard to tell because they are more modern. I think there's something really nice about those older films, Wrath of Khan or Voyage Home or Undiscovered Country, where they use model ships that still look when they're sort of, they still look really nice. And I'm interested to see with the next gen films, especially Insurrection and Nemesis, I think, because then they went full digital on all their models. So I'm interested to see how they look, because on my HD TV, the Blu-rays, you can kind of tell that everything is CG. It sort of loses that texture of something tangible that you can reach out and touch. I will say I did pick up the next gen TV show in Blu-ray, and the restoration on that is beautiful. And I hope they do the same for Deep Space Nine and Voyager, and they upscale everything because it is nice. I like them.
Sounds like, I mean, all the Star Trek stuff sells very well. Even the new show, the Strange New Worlds, right?
That came out. It's a great show.
Came out on Blu-ray a couple weeks ago and was like a top five seller, which kind of surprised me. It was, you know, it sold better than a lot of other bigger movies that were out there. So there's clearly, I think you'll probably see those other shows get upscaled. And I mean, the sales are there, right? I mean, it makes sense. I know it's expensive to do that work, but.
Yeah, I think especially this season of Picard season 3 has really sort of reignited the love for the older shows. There's a lot of references to Voyager and Deep Space Nine, and I think there's a lot of love there. I would go out and buy them. I hope they do it.
I think in the Picard, they've done releases of those, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep, they do, which I'm really grateful for. All of the shows, actually, Discovery and the animated shows, Lower Decks. Did Prodigy get a release? I haven't seen it. I haven't picked that up. If it has, but all the others I picked up.
Yeah, they tend to take care of their fans, I think. They still get it, and you know, CBS is putting the stuff out. But I was super impressed with the original six movies. So
yeah.
that is what I was most curious about. That's what I was sort of asking. I'm not super familiar with the next generation. I guess I'll get familiar as I watch them. But
yeah, you will.
I was curious that CGI thing. You mentioned it on like an HD TV,
mm-hmm.
and then you take it to 4K, and it's like everything in the background or foreground that's shot and it's real looks better.
Yeah,
and then the CGI they typically, I think Peter Jackson did this with Lord of the Rings, which is why it looks great in 4K. But they typically don't re-render.
Yeah,
all of that CGI. So it really starts to, the higher the resolution gets, the more that stuff starts to stick out. So
I think that's what they were talking about on Voyager. One of the reasons they didn't, I think on Next Gen, they had all the visual effects and they could redo them. And I think on Deep Space Nine and Voyager, as they started using digital, they couldn't upscale.
Yeah.
They wouldn't upscale the same way as, footage of me and you talking. So it would look weird. But I love these, all the old shows. X-Files looks really great in HD. That pilot, you can see, Scully's wispy hairs and all the threads on her clothes. And I would love Buffy to get an upscale.
Oh, that one's due for sure.
It's very due.
Yeah. So do you watch most of your, you watch most of the stuff here on the, we, this is before we even got on, but the projector screen behind you, is that typically where you watch stuff?
Yeah. I love it.
How big are we talking there? What's that?
This is 120 inches. Okay. And it's 4K. It's a Vava Chrome. And I have a 4K player and a PlayStation 5. Mm-hmm. And yeah, everything looks really nice. We have blackout curtains. We get the sun at the end of the day. So we have blackout curtains. And once everything is dark, this blue wall presents us black for the screen. So there's no bleed from the screen onto the wall. And yeah, it's nice.
So how many speakers are in there? Poke stuff, right?
Yes. So we have the subwoofer. We've got a central sound bar. Mm-hmm. Because we're in an apartment, so I can't really blast everything I've like crazy. Yeah. And then we have these Wi-Fi surround sound speakers, which I'm just sitting in front of right now. So you just plug them in, and then they connect by Wi-Fi, and the surround sound is actually really good. The way that things were set up before, I showed you just before we started, we had a ceiling-mounted projector, and then everything was sort of wired through the ceiling. So we got to pull all that stuff down. But I was mentioning before we started, our upstairs neighbors were so noisy. They walk around like they've got bowling balls on their feet, and our ceiling projector would bounce. The image would bounce as they walked around. So yeah, we got a front mounted short throw projector, and I love it.
Yeah. That is the future for projectors for sure, because they can work anywhere. I mean, you could put that in a regular, any living room across the country. If you got the wall space, you could make that happen. At the ceiling, I've always had a hard time too with like the fact that you, with the long throw stuff, you have to dedicate a room to it.
Yeah.
Because this is in the back of the room. Your screen's in the front. Your speakers are all around. Like you can't, having at least the display in the front allows you to get a little more creative with the layout of the room, which is huge.
Yeah. I mean, we have cats, and they, the problem with the short throw is because it generates heat. Once it's been on for like 20 minutes, the cats are kind of like sense the warmth, and then they're all up in the space. They're okay if they sort of like just lie by it, but they're like, they want to sit on top of it. But it's good. They're good.
How has it been with like the wireless speakers? I'm very curious about, because I think that
they've been good. I'm
just nervous about using them. Do they drop? I mean,
they haven't. They have been, knock on wood, they have actually been really, really good. The surround sound sounds great. You know, a lot of the discs now have the Dolby, the presentation for the surround sound.
Yeah, Atmos.
Yeah, you can really hear it going around the room, which is kind of nice because we're just in an apartment, but it still does the deed. So yeah, I don't work for Polk. I'm not a representative of them, but they work really well.
No, they have good stuff. I use one of their sound bars. It's a Dolby Atmos sound bar, so it fakes that whole, I mean, I just have the front center, but I use that in my living room as the main audio. And I've occasionally watched movies up there, and I'm like, you know what? This stuff's come a long way from soundbars I had 10 years ago.
Yeah. I had a soundbar 10 years ago and I swore that I would never go back. It lasted like 3 months and then everything blew and everything sounded tinny.
Right.
And then I was like, never again. And then I saw this offer and I was like, we had to do something about the wires and the ceiling mounted stuff. So I was like, with this projector, we don't need a receiver. We don't need like all the wires going everywhere. It can just plug directly in. And yeah, it's just so much easier.
I mean, it's just that to me seems like a natural next step for a lot of people who have never gotten into home theater stuff because for that reason, like, I need a receiver. Mm-hmm. I need 7 speakers. I need a subwoofer. They've all got to be hardwired. I got to run the walls, the ceilings. You got wire tacks everywhere.
Like, yeah.
If they can get that wireless technology a little bit better, Mm-hmm. I think, I mean, this is my hope, is like more people adopt this sort of stuff. This technology gets better and easier to adopt. And then more people begin to appreciate the quality of a disc versus streaming.
Yeah.
I hope this is where it's headed. Cause I do think that's the holdup for a lot of people. Like the average person on a 55 inch TV, you're going to be hard pressed to get them to realize, you know, the differences between stuff.
Yeah.
So as this stuff gets easier and more attainable, hopefully it helps drive the physical market as well.
Yeah, I hope so too. I hope there is a sort of a rebirth of physical media. I get really sad swinging by. I mean, I guess this is on me. It's my fault. but, you know, I would go to Best Buy and I would love just looking at everything, the new releases and all the shelves. Didn't always buy from there because it was a little expensive. But, you know, I'm sad to go in there now and just see everything has sort of dwindled to one end counter.
Well, that's where these independent, I don't know what to call, I mean, I guess they're really video stores still at this point. But, I mean, I know I have a few out here. How's the scene in L.A.? Like, I think there's a...
We have
the
Amoeba.
One I know is Amoeba. That's the one I know. But are there a lot of like? Are there still a lot of independent ones, or is it
not
less
a
so?
Whole lot? We had one on Lancashire and Camarillo, I think, that was Odyssey Video, and that was like a rental store, but you could still buy a couple of things, and that's gone. We've got Game Dude, which is about 3 miles away on Sherman Way in Laurel Canyon, which is now our go-to spot for secondhand Blu-rays and DVDs. If I'm by Amoeba, I'll swing by Amoeba. Sometimes it gets a little pricey in there. I'm so sorry if all you hear is rustling. I've got a cat in a tunnel behind me. I'm so sorry.
All good. I've had my dogs going off on the podcast more than once.
Yeah. But a lot of... There used to be a great place on Ventura Boulevard called Second Spin that was really good. And that's
I've heard of them. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's really sad. I said that, you know, if I wasn't acting and I opened a business, I'd be like, I'd open a physical Blu-ray store. And I don't know if it would survive, but in my heart, that's what I would
even
do.
Even in LA, right? That's what scared me is like, even in the, I mean, that's the center of entertainment in the world that you, I mean, you don't think it would survive. Like, is there just not that culture there so much anymore? Because I know it used to be.
Yeah, it used to be. I mean, even I used to work at a movie theater called Arclight, and you know, all the movie theaters are going now. I have a movie theater around the corner from me right now called the Lemley NoHo 7, and that is closing down by the end of the year. They're replacing that with you know, high-rise luxury apartments. So now we just have the multiplexes down in Burbank and Universal City Walk at Universal Studios. They're the closest movie theaters to us for miles and miles and miles.
Yikes.
Yeah.
Yikes. It's more than just physical media. It's the theaters too. The indie theaters are all down. I mean, I remember, I mean, I'm only 30, so I grew up at the very tail end of like, you know, home video rental stores and everything. I remember them well, but even the theater thing is huge. And I'm up in New Hampshire, and it's like, might as well be a dead zone. Like, you better build a movie theater in your house, because otherwise you're not seeing anything other than whatever the top two movies are at the box office. Uh-huh. Like, you're not getting anything up here in almost all of New England. There's some great theaters down by in Boston, and there's they do a film festival, and they're great. Somerville Theater, Brattle Theater, Coolidge Corner. I'll shout them out. They are great, but boy, there's not many of them left, and they've all had to actually group together as one sort of theater unit to even survive, I think, together. Like, they can't independently operate anymore. They work together.
Little theaters that will do, you know, special programming of old films that, down at the New Bev. And then we've got Cinespia, which will do screenings in the Hollywood Forever Cemetery, and they'll sort of throw up old films on the side of a mausoleum. But other than that, it's a real shrinking, but there was a drive-in theater that just closed down as well. Like old school drive-in theater, and that's gone. It's What a mess.
Yeah. I mean, and especially being in LA, I mean, how can anybody else hope to survive if the ones in LA cannot survive? Like that's tough. I mean, is it just the way the industry's going? I mean, you're in this world, you hear commerce. I mean, everything just seems so consumable and sort of it's the hot thing right now. And then Netflix, Hulu, Amazon, Disney, whoever, HBO, they have to find the new hot thing because nothing lasts past eight up. You have 8 weeks to be the hot thing.
Yeah. Like
The Last of Us was the hot thing. So now what's next for HBO? Because the hot thing is over.
Yeah. I mean, they got Succession, I guess. I don't know what's after Succession though. I don't know what's coming out after that.
It just
finished.
All feels like, I don't want to say throwaway, but it just feels like it's just made to be consumed and maybe not appreciated as much as it used to be.
Yeah, I think so. We have, don't mind me, we have a system for when we watch films called a pull. And so me or my fiance will take it in turns to do what we call a big pull. And I will pull like maybe 25 to 30 films that I'd be like, yeah, I could watch this tonight. And then we will whittle it down to three. The other person will whittle it down to three. And then I will have the final say and we trade off.
But I do that with my wife too. So that's very, I say, hey, what kind of mood are you in? And then I go down in the basement and I try to pick four or five that fit the mood. And then she picks the final one.
Yeah.
It's the only way to get it done when you have such a large collection.
But you know, there's something about just going through the shelves and just seeing the spine and saying like, oh yeah, Aaron Brockovich. Right. I haven't seen that since it came out. Let's watch Aaron Brockovich. And you lose it on streaming. I forget what's on. I forget what films have come out. I was sitting here the other day being like, oh my gosh, what was that film that I really enjoyed? Charlize Theron and, The Old Guard. Oh my gosh, The Old Guard. And you completely forget about it because it's not on the home screen. It's not something you can find alphabetically. And I guess, shame on me, I should add it to favorites or wish list or whatever it is. But there's just something about...
But nobody does that. Everyone just lets, you know what I mean? That takes a lot of time when the algorithms are just pushing you with the newest stuff to go through and favorite. And then you favorite stuff and 6 months later, it's gone anyway.
Well, I also feel like with physical media that, I mean, certainly back in the day, things had a shelf life that was so much longer. You know, you would...
Right.
Lord of the Rings, Fellowship of the Ring was released, December 2001?
One, yeah.
And then it was 12 months before the DVD came out. And then it was another 12 months before it went to Sky TV or cable. And then it was another 12 months before that went onto sort of what we call terrestrial TV. And so the films were sort of in the public lexicon for sort of 3-4 years that it was like, oh, this is the cable premiere and this is the regular television premiere. And,
right.
And then 12 months after that, here's the special editions. And it was like, it was in your consciousness all the time. And now, you know, The Old Guard comes out and it's a great film. And it's after 3 weeks, it's off the homepage. And then I've forgotten about it. And it's a great film. And I would love a physical copy of it. And yeah, it's, I don't know. And now, coming from the writer's side of things, things that are, and this is a pet peeve of mine, I'm so sorry. I struggle with films that open on a big action set piece that is actually a flash forward to something that happens later in the film. Because the algorithm says that you have to hook the audience in the first 10 minutes to get them into the film, and no one has the patience to just sit down and get to know characters for half an hour before the story takes off. I feel like things are shifting to a cynical sort of paradigm where someone's sitting in an office watching stats and figures of when people check out of a film, and they say, the algorithm says that if there's not an explosion in the first 37 seconds, they check out. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's the YouTubeification of movies and TV. Cause wow. that's the same thing on YouTube is that's what they always preach. And it's like, you got to hook them in the first 10 seconds and they give you, this is insider from my side, but like they give you like audience retention scores and like,
oh really?
How many people were still watching at, you know, 30 seconds into your video? Well, less than 50% of people who clicked on it were still watching. So that's a bad video and it hurts your video. But what they don't understand, well, maybe the 50% who stuck around really, really enjoyed it. So it's not a bad video.
Yeah.
It just wasn't for a group of people and that's okay.
Yeah.
But it's almost like, yeah, you have to, and that's why, I mean, I'll be totally honest, like my videos probably don't get as many views as some other people if I tried to play more towards that with my audience, because I really just want to create stuff that I care about and put it together in a nice package and not have to do that first 10 second explosion.
Yeah. Which
I even, just, you know, it's not
I worth actually.
It.
Haven't seen it being utilized as much recently, but there was something going on over COVID where even trailers would have like a 5 second snippet of the trailer before you show a 2 minute trailer. And it drove me nuts. And I'd be like, I love trailers. I enjoy, you know, wanting to know what's coming out. And I would be like, oh, look, this new trailer's out. And then having to sit through 10 seconds of before getting into the trailer. No.
That's YouTube's fault.
Thank you.
That whole thing was, those aren't made for TV. Those aren't made for the movie theater. That was social media and YouTube's fault, because YouTube, the Paramount, whoever, Warner Brothers, they didn't want you to leave in the first 10 seconds while they loaded up the title screen or the green card at the beginning, the red, you know, red band, green band, whatever, because people leave and then the algorithm just smashes your content and nobody will see your trailer. They just won't recommend it. But do the trailer before the trailer and now you hook them and then you still got to do that stuff.
Yeah.
So it's now taking you 20, 30 seconds to even get in where you could have been halfway through a trailer at that point. It's all algorithms, which is really, I get it. I mean, I live this world. I do this. I mean, I work in marketing full time and I do this part time. I know how things are going, but it's everybody's kind of catering to the AI and they're not catering to the human, and creativity is, there's plenty of great people out there who are doing great things.
Yeah.
But man, like that mass consumerism creativity is just dying. And I wonder, as a writer, how do you view all this AI stuff that's come out lately? People are talking like AI is like, we don't need writers in Hollywood anymore. I can type in and say, hey, AI, write me an episode of It's Always Sunny and here's what's going to happen. And they'll write the script. And it's like, yeah, they will. But that would be the worst episode they ever shot.
Yeah.
It's not great.
You know, I think it's certainly, maybe it'll be a while before it comes to television and film. I mean, who knows? Because there's wonderful CG rendered characters now, and so maybe actors' days are numbered. I think it's certainly more prevalent in voiceover right now, where you have actors like James Earl Jones, for example, who has signed away the rights to his voice.
Yeah.
After he passes away, that a computer-generated algorithm will replicate his voice for, you know, however long the Star Wars machine runs. And I think that, you know, there's rumblings in the voiceover community that there are concerns that you could go into a booth to record, you know, mocap on a video game and hit all the vowels and consonants or read a few sentences that you need to read for AI to be like, I can replicate Dominic Burgess's voice and performance and we don't need him anymore. We don't have to pay him anymore. We don't need him to come into the sound booth anymore. We don't need his mocap anymore because we've got his, you know, you do a mocap game and you sit in front of a lens and you, it sounds wild, but you read through words and you literally pull faces in front of the camera. So you sit there going, dog, hat, white, red, hotel, and it will capture all your things. And then a video will talk you through like T-pose, arms, and you sort of go through all these motions. And then again with your face where you'll be like, so they capture everything. And so I think that there is a world in which performances might eventually be taken away and run through a computer.
That scares me, and I hope that I understand AI, and it's going to have its uses, and it's sort of an inevitable thing, and hopefully it doesn't kill us all, but hopefully it doesn't go full Skynet. I mean, that's the scariest part, but like the artistic side of it all too. Like I hope just that the average consumer, the average person, like I hope people just still kind of rebel against that in a way. Mm-hmm. Like you have to connect to people. Like I don't really want to see the James Earl Jones stuff. I don't mind. Like, okay, you want to keep Darth Vader's voice as Darth Vader. It's fine. He's always worn a mask. It's not like we knew, you know, the voice is the voice, but like, I really don't want to see a movie in 10 years that stars like Clint Eastwood after he's gone. You know what I mean? Like, I want to enjoy what he had and his filmography, and it can end at a certain point.
Did someone buy, I feel like maybe a few years ago, didn't someone buy the rights to like a couple of old school actors, like 50s, 60s, James Dean, and they bought the rights to...
And they said they were going to make movies with them.
Yeah.
And I've heard nothing since.
Me neither.
I think that's I'm hoping this is because people said, James Dean has movies that I want to watch. I don't really give a new actor a shot. Like, why are we... He's had his film art, and unfortunately it's very short. But yeah, I don't know. I hope people just like keep that human connection with music, with art, with movies and TV. Like there has to be a human connection to this stuff, or we're all just going to, we might as well just all put our headsets on and just go into the metaverse all day, because otherwise,
I mean, I love James Cameron and you know, that sort of technological push. But now, you know, there's social media influencers that are AI on, you know, and they have accounts, and I just worry that it won't take long for someone in a studio to say, oh, look, this Jessica AI person has 7.2 million followers on social media. Let's implant her as a guest star on the revival of This Is Us. And I don't know. Who knows?
I can't. Every time, I mean, hopefully they're afraid to do it, because it feels like every time they try to put somebody in a movie like that, like Carrie Fisher in Rogue One, and it was like, oh, that was very Uncanny Valley. I appreciate what they were trying to do, but it's just odd.
Mm-hmm.
So. Interesting viewpoint, though. I mean, I've been talking about this like with marketing stuff and just my job and what I do during the day, but yeah, it's just affecting everything. So hey, I hope in 10, 15, 20 years they're still hiring people like you to actually act and not just have
computers.
I can't lose that human connection.
Hopefully I'm of the age that in 20 years time, and I've got wrinkles and gray hair, that I'm sure they will, that there'll still be something Uncanny Valley that they can't quite get wrinkles just right just yet. So they have to hire the old actors. But, oh, those youngsters, they're done for.
I know, it's crazy. Well, this has been very interesting, so thank you.
Thank you.
I appreciate all the insight. I've talked to a couple directors, but it's amazing how they're sort of just disconnected. Some of them don't even know where their movies are.
Oh, wow.
It's a really crazy thing. I don't know if you run into that, but I've had I've had directors who go, well, you think anybody would, you know, would care if I put that out?
A new format?
Like, oh, I'll have to call somebody. I don't even know who has the rights. You know, some of this stuff is just crazy out there. But your insights as an actor were definitely, I appreciate that. And the whole thing about the residuals is fascinating because I don't think people, for some reason, that seems to be very publicized in like the music world that, like, yeah, you pay $15 a month for Spotify, and they pay your favorite artists literal dirt.
Yeah.
And the only way to support them is to buy more. And, like, with movies and TV, it just hasn't, like, that connection hasn't been made. People aren't supporting more in that way. Theaters didn't get bigger. Like,
I think maybe there's a disconnect to sort of the general public and, you know, what people think actors earn or, you know.
Yeah.
The journeyman actor like me or, you know, guest star actors are not making the money that the top 1% of actors make. They're fine. They're producers. They get back end deals. Right. But I think, you know, the general public worldwide here, like, oh, actors get residuals. They're fine. Maybe in the 80s and 90s, that might have been the case, and people were able to live and sustain themselves and raise a family. But I think that's very quickly gone away or is going away.
Well, moral of the story then is
keep working.
As always on this channel, keep buying physical media.
Yeah, do it.
That's the best way to support. So go out and buy the DVDs and Blu-rays of those shows you like, and buy the latest movie releases and whatever format you buy it on. I mean, I know a lot of people think it's crazy that DVDs still sell so much, but if you're buying it in a physical format, it's supporting something, you know, no matter how you consume it, if it's on a physical format, I'm all for it.
Me too.
Buy them up. So awesome. Well, I appreciate the time. This was great. I am, I was slightly starstruck talking to Psycho Pete because I am a huge Always Sunny fan. So, thank you for even reaching out because you actually found me. And
said, yeah, because I follow your channel.
I appreciate that.
I get angry because you don't have a strict alphabetical system, but that's okay. Oh, no. We can let it slide.
Are you one of those people in the comments who wants to come burn my house down?
Oh, no. But I did have to leave.
Wait a second. What's your YouTube username? I need to look up some comments.
I am strict alphabetical system.
I get it.
I left Blockbuster Video after 3 weeks and I was working there, and it made me so angry that Independence Day came before Horton Hears a Who. And I'm like, I can't function. And I had to get out.
I used to do strict alphabetical, and then honestly, it just became too much, and so I said, I gotta just go by the letter. But at least, Independence Day is in the right spot in my collection. Okay, it's just not in the right spot next to iRobot or even the sequel, potentially.
No, that I can't handle. No. I was at Blockbuster, and they had Fellowship of the Ring in science fiction fantasy, totally fine. And then they had Two Towers in drama and action. And they'd split them in the store. Oh,
yeah. And see, if I had to place each of those, I would put Fellowship and Drama and Two Towers in, because the Two Towers is more sci-fi fantasy to me than the Fellowship, which is a little more dramatic. So they're even in the wrong spot. But even
let
if
them
you
live
to
together.
That.
Oh, yeah. Boy.
No, people yell at me about that. And I fix them when I see them, especially when I did that whole collection video, and I was like, oh, shit. Like, why do I have John Wick 2 behind John Wick 3? That needs to be, I need to.
Fix it. Yeah.
But, well, awesome. Where can people find you?
Oh, boy. If Twitter is still a thing for much longer, I'm at Dominic Burgess. Dominic Burgess? I think I'm just at Dominic Burgess. And I think on Instagram, I'm Dominic Burgess 1 because someone else beat me to the technological advancement.
I can confirm on Twitter you are Dominic Burgess. On Instagram, you are Dominic Burgess 1.
Yeah, that's it.
Okay, so that's where you can find it. Anything you've got coming up that people might see you in, or anything recent that check out?
Yep, I'm popping up on an Apple show called Mrs. American Pie. Maybe it'll change the name to Delacorte. That'll come out sometime this summer. I have a little part in a film called Rebel Moon, Zack Snyder's film.
Oh.
That'll pop up, I think.
That's a big one.
On Christmas Day. And I'm in prosthetics and, yeah, just fun, in and out.
Nice.
And that's about it.
Well, hey, Rebel Moon, that's I think that's going to be a big one.
Yeah, I hope
so. A lot of people excited about that one. And so the Apple, is that an Apple TV like exclusive show that you're doing?
Yes. Okay, we shot that last summer. And then Rebel Moon, we shot last summer as well. And I think it's part, I think there's two parts, but I think I'm in part one. I don't know. We'll find out.
We will see.
Yeah.
All right. Well, hey, best of luck with everything.
Hopefully thank you so much.
You get some more auditions. Hopefully you get some more parts. I mean, everything I've seen you in has been really great. So
thank you.
I appreciate you taking the time too out of your day and, and talking to me and the channel. So thanks. And I'll make sure everything's linked in the description so people can come find you and follow along so they don't miss anything. But from one collector to another, thank you for keeping it alive out there in LA.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, everyone. So that's our interview with Dominic. He was great to have on. I can't believe, you know, we found him on Twitter. Super cool. I just tweeted out, said, who wants to come on? And he sort of raised his hand. He was like, hey, I'm an actor. I'm in the industry. I see this stuff every day and I love physical media. So I was like, perfect fit. Let's do it. And I learned a lot by talking to him. This interview was super informative. I think it's so interesting how the industry for working actors is changing with streaming and, you know, also almost kind of shitty the way that streaming services are kind of working around contracts and, you know, just not paying people what they probably should be paid in traditional, you know, methods. So it's a very, very interesting time to be out there as an actor and, you know, also loved his physical media collection and his enthusiasm for commentaries and special features and just everything that physical has to offer. I mean, here's somebody who was working at HMV, who was working at, you know, supermarkets when they were selling DVDs, who worked at Blockbuster for 3 weeks, but still somebody who was clearly very passionate about this and having that industry insight was, I think, very interesting for me and hopefully interesting for you. So if you guys enjoyed this, definitely go check out Dominic. His Twitter and his Instagram account are linked in the description. Also his IMDb page. So make sure you check that out and you can check his demo reel if you want to see stuff that he's been in. But also make sure to follow us wherever you're listening to this. If you're on YouTube, make sure you're subscribed. If you're on Spotify, Apple, wherever you're at, make sure you follow along on those platforms. And if you enjoyed it, consider leaving us a 5-star review. It helps us gain more traction and get more people on the podcast. As always, make sure you follow me on social media. Those links will be in the description as well, so you stay up to date with everything that's going on with the Films at Home channel and content. And I just appreciate you guys coming out and continuing to support these podcast episodes. Once again, thank you to our sponsor, Manscaped, as well. I appreciate their support. Big help when you get sponsors like that to support the content. So I appreciate them. Helps keep our content free. I'm not putting anything behind a paywall because I can get great sponsors like them. So go check out Manscaped. Go to manscaped.com. Use my promo code. But hope you guys have a great rest of your day. Stay safe. Stay healthy out there. Enjoy the rest of your week. And I will talk to you soon.
Coming soon. Be sure to subscribe to the Films at Home podcast using your favorite app so you don't miss another episode. And while you're there, don't forget to rate and review this podcast, which helps us out tremendously. You can also help support us by watching our short-form content over on YouTube and TikTok by searching Films at Home. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at @films_@_home. The intro and outro were created by Elon Osborne. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.